Thank you very much. I thought John said being dragged away in terroristic fashion. Let me say that being the last in a list of brilliant speakers, I have to say that I probably don't have anything to add. But nevertheless, let me try to squeeze my 15 minutes and share with you a number of insights regarding the institutions that we are confronted with. Let me first say that a number of us have come from the third world and from different parts of the world, from Asia, to Washington to join you. We did not come to dialogue with the World Bank and the IMF. We did not come to negotiate with Wolfensohn and Kohler. We actually came to shut down these institutions. About 3 to 4 weeks ago, those of us who opened up the newspapers found a very interesting item, a study that had been commissioned by the United States Congress when it approved the $18 billion quota increase for the IMF in 1998. And the results of that study, called the Meltzer Commission report, had the following four conclusions. One is that the IMF does not promote growth. It instead institutionalizes stagnation. The second is that the World Bank is irrelevant and not central to the battle against poverty. The third is that these institutions are unduly influenced by the political and financial institutions of the G7 countries, particularly the United States. And fourth is that these institutions do not respond so much to external need, but to the imperatives of bureaucratic imperialism. Now, this was a mainstream report. There was very little in it that those who have been following the works of Susan George, of Bruce Rich, of John Kavanaugh, many of the authors here, of Food First, would find new. What was new was that the so-called radical critique, the progressive critique, has now been embraced by a significant part of the mainstream, and that, in fact, this report itself made fairly important recommendations about the downsizing of these institutions. However, the logic of the report is a logic leading to abolition. But being a U.S. government-appointed commission, the commission hesitated on the brink, and instead of recommending what its logic itself would push it to, it said, well, let us try to find a place for these two institutions. We will make the IMF the lender of last resort. Very interesting, because it had just gone through documenting how the IMF had screwed up in one case after the other on being a lender of last resort. And it said, let's rename the World Bank. Call it the World Development Authority and give it some anti-poverty function. after it had gone through about 80 pages documenting how the World Bank had in all cases promoted and created poverty instead of eliminating it. Well, these were the limits. Now, the Meltzer report does not follow the logic of its analysis. It is up to us, to you, to all of us, to follow that logic to its conclusion and to abolish these Jurassic institutions. Let us consign those institutions to where they belong, to history, and to build new institutions that would truly advance the global justice, global equity, global environmental sustainability, and global democracy. These are the values that bring us together here this evening and which unites 99% of the people in the world with you this evening. Let me then move on very briefly to the topic for this evening, which was the casino capitalism. And what I would just like to do is to very briefly go through what we went in Asia and why we went through it and the larger context within which casino capitalism operates. Well, in the early 1990s, was a period when the sector of speculative finance began to drive the U.S. economy. But this was also a period when, because of the dynamics of the system, you had fairly low interest rates and low stock prices, and therefore a crisis of profitability in this sector. Across the Pacific, you had burgeoning economies, so-called miracle economies. And there was tremendous pressure exerted by the hedge funds, the banks, the big commercial banks, the investment funds, on the U.S. Treasury Department to open up those economies to capital from the United States, to portfolio investment, and to speculative capital. The tool for this was the International Monetary Fund. To one country after another, it pressured these countries to liberalize their capital accounts and liberalize the entry of portfolio investment and speculative capital into their economies. For their own reasons, the technocrats of the Asian economies agreed and caved in, and with the IMF, they formulated the classical formula consisting of three things. One, financial liberalization, bring in foreign capital to reinvigorate their banking sectors. Second is to maintain high interest rates. Why? In order to be able to attract that capital from the north into these economies, because they would not come in unless there were an interest rate differential. Third is fixed exchange rates, or informally fixed exchange rates, in order to be able to protect these foreign investors from what they called foreign currency risk. So that at the end of the day, if they brought in their money, when they withdrew it, it would still be the same in terms of its dollar value. Therefore, this push for fixed exchange rates did not so much come from those countries, technocrats, but it came from the fund managers working through the U.S. Treasury Department and the International Monetary Fund. $100 billion flowed in between 1994 and 1997. And where this money went in these so-called burgeoning economies was not to the really productive sectors of manufacturing and investment. Guess where that money went? You don't need to guess far. It went into real estate, and it went into the stock market. These were the areas where you could derive high profits and derive them with a very quick turnaround time. These were the boom years. These were the times when almost any self-respecting investment fund had to come to Asia. Now, anybody with common sense, except of course the financial managers and the technocrats of the IMF and our dear old Treasury Department, headed by our dear old Treasury of the Secretary, Larry Summers, formerly chief economist of the World Bank, guess it? Naturally, common sense would lead one to expect overinvestment. And indeed, massive overinvestment took place. Stock prices tumbled. Real estate values came down to the ground because this was a speculative bubble economy. And what happens when that happened is naturally the panic. People wanted to get out before their money was devalued any further. And of course, just like when there is in the throes of a physical crisis of an animal, for instance, there are jackals around. What we also saw were jackals in the form of hedge funds trying to make money out of the plunges in the currencies relative to the dollars. The hedge funds trying to make money out of currency speculation like the Soros Quantum Fund in this process. What we had was a panic exacerbated by the speculative financiers like Soros. And in 6 months alone, $100 billion left the Asian economies. Now, no amount of that magnitude could leave without bringing down, like Samson, the economies of East Asia with it. And indeed, they came tumbling down. The next phase of the drama, the 7th Cavalry, headed by General Custer, General Kam Dae-soo, came in with... Incidentally, before I forget, thank you very much, Mr. Bob Nyman of Preamble, for giving Mr. Kam Dae-soo a pie in the face. Bob Nyman, where are you? Okay. Came in with $100 billion in rescue packages, and as Tony Clark said, it was not to rescue these economies, it was to give the government money to pay off the foreign creditors of the local firms. In other words, private sector debt to foreign private sector creditors was socialized. The people ended up with a burden in the future to pay off these funds that had been borrowed by their governments to the IMF, and they will pay that far into the future. The IMF also came in with a formula that was supposed to revive these economies, but again, as people in Africa and Latin America had experienced, this formula, which involved cutbacks in government budgets and the institution of high credit rates, created a situation worse than before. So that what we had was, in 1998, the Korean economy plunged by 10%, Thailand by 8%, and in Indonesia by 25%. What was a crisis was turned into a disaster by the International Monetary Fund, by General Kam Dae-soo, backed by Marshall, Larry Summers, and Robert Rubin. Now, the results were devastating, because in the end, we really have to talk about human beings being played around with. In Indonesia, the statistics do not capture the intensity of the poverty rate going from 11.2% of the population to 60% in 6 months. In Thailand, we had an unemployment rate that rose to 6 to 8% of the workforce, as was it was 9% in South Korea in 1998. These were the really bleak times. Not the end of the story, as Tony Clark said, because the U.S. Treasury Department used the crisis to follow through on a decades-long agenda for opening up Asian trade, investment, and capital markets by, as Tony said, bringing with the IMF measures of deregulation, privatization, and liberalization, which has now ended with so many of these economies, assets which had been built up over a generation, passing at fire sale prices to American and European firms. Let me just sum up what best describes the situation. And it is not a radical critic, but Mr. Jeff Garten himself, who is formerly the undersecretary of Mr. Clinton in his early administration. And Mr. Garten said, and I quote, "Most of these countries are going to go through a deep and dark tunnel. But on the other end, there is going to be a significantly different Asia in which American firms have achieved much greater market penetration, much greater access," unquote. Let me end by trying to forestall the bell with just a plea to put this in a bigger picture, and very quickly. If there is such tremendous hyperactivity in the financial sector, this is because of a crisis of overcapacity and overproduction. And if we see these moves towards tremendous monopolization at this point, Microsoft, Mobil, Exxon, BP, Amoco, this is all a result of the crisis of profitability within the industrial sector. And this is why money goes into the financial sector for speculation. Now, the reason for overcapacity, let me just sum it up in one thing, that capitalism, while it creates great wealth, also creates great poverty. It creates great wealth for many, for a few, but creates massive poverty and therefore a tremendous lack of purchasing power for billions in the world today. So, let us face it. There is a specter haunting the world. And what is the name of that specter? Globalization? Yes, but let us not use euphemisms. That specter is capitalism. Abolishing the World Bank and the IMF is only one step in the way of bringing about a reign of global justice, equity, democracy, and sustainability. Seattle and Washington were only the first legs of a long march. Let us remember that. Let us also remember that so long as we have courage, we have clear thinking, and above all, we have compassion for one another, nothing can stop us. We will prevail. Venceremos.
Thank you, Walden. Walden said he wasn't here to dialogue with the World Bank and IMF. I will say that tomorrow at 3 p.m., he and Jokey Jehu, who started the day, are debating someone from the World Bank and someone from the IMF across the street at the Jewish Community Center at 3 p.m. You're all invited. Also, many of you have asked how you get more information on the events of April 16th and April 17th. There are many people here who can tell you. If you want to get quick information, go to www.a16.com. There's a lot more. There's a lot more tonight. We're going to have Ralph Nader. We're going to have a panel of paradigm warriors led by Maude Barlow, the indefatigable Maude Barlow. There's a phone number for people who don't like the internet, which is for details on the Convergence Center, and that's 202-544-9360. Let us end by giving all of you and our panelists one final round of applause. Thank you.
And now we have a surprise. We have a special surprise. Some special guests from England. Seize the day.
Thanks, Jerry. You know, as the CEO of the Monsanto Corporation, it's a great honor to me to be asked to speak here tonight at the International Monetary Forum. And it's kind of good to see all you folks coming here to D.C. to show that we do support globalization. We're going to give those demonstrators hell tomorrow. No, seriously, it is an honor for me because, you know, a long time ago, as I told the International Finance Corporation, I said, it's truly easy to make a great deal of money dealing with the primary needs of food and shelter and clothing. And I stand by that today. And I look at the IMF and I see the good work they're doing. I don't know if you're anything like me, I guess you owe a great debt to them. And in particular what they're doing to spread biotechnology around the planet, I think they're doing a lot for us. And I just want to say, I know there's a lot of criticism. And it's a bit like us, really, you know. We used to be a dirty company. We've cleaned up our act. I'm honest. I know. We made some mistakes. And it was the same with the IMF, and now we've cleaned up that act as well. And I just want to do this little presentation now with the Monsanto Corporate Affairs team to take you through our history so you can see how we've evolved. Ladies and gentlemen, may I first introduce to you the man who grows those genetically engineered soybeans, Mr. Roundup Red. Come on up, farmer. Next, I'd like to bring up here is a cheerleader. We've had a few problems over in Europe there. We had to have our own cheerleader. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Leader 1999. Next, of course, is our very own secret weapon in the battle for fair trade and free trade across the planet. Ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for Mr. Terminator Gene. Last but by no means least, I'd like to introduce to you a little lady who's very close to my heart. Over in England, they call her Miss Canderell. You just know her as sweet and low. But whichever way you look at it, she's got all the bounty of nature, but none of the calories. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Canderell. This is my very own FIB Agent Orange. I'm Sustainability Bob Shapiro, and this is our little presentation of Food and Health and Hope.
Those polar bears now, who really cares now? They're breeding gender-bending babies who won't be breeding none, 'cause PCBs, yeah, are in the seas, yeah. We like to think that there's a little piece of us in everyone, 'cause we're Monsanto. That's right, Monsanto. We're turning Satan into Santa by giving kitties cancer. Coming through now, we're changing you now. The Mother Nature Terminators of food and health and hope. That DDT ban going sprayed on Maine to turn it toxic too. Let me remind you about Indochina. Then call me dominoes were falling, so they sprayed them into hell. Did peasant farmers
orange pajamas.
We made their jungle cover wither, then we withered them as well. Cause we're Monsanto, that's right Monsanto. We're turning Satan into Santa by giving kitties cancer.
Coming through now, we're changing you now.
The mother nature terminators of food and health and hope.
It's not our fault, there's chemical warfare.
But if there's dollars in dioxin, it's our duty to supply that plane of poison. They washed our boys in a cancer agent from the CIA. Hey, I cannot tell a lie from Pentagon came. That drug is Bartane. Our Pepsi Cola with no calories was every kiddie's treat when there were rumors.
It gave them tumors.
Somebody falsified the data and we called it NutriSweet. And you get more juice now from a dairy moo cow. Monsanto's daily dose of hormones that udder's gonna swell.
You'll think of green though if you're in chemo.
There may be BSD mastectomies, but nobody can tell. Cause we're Monsanto. That's right, Monsanto. We're turning by giving kitties cancer.
Coming through now, we're changing you now.
The mother nature terminators of food and health and home. Robert Shapiro, well he's our hero.
He's on a mission with a vision of sustainability, which means we're going to keep on growing
till we're the biggest corporation in the 21st century.
In the future for the big polluters, Eastman and eco-friendly line and redesign and DNA genetic eyes on that far horizon
where everything alive is privatized and every seed will pay. We got the soya, we got the lawyers, the politicians in our pockets, all the way to presidents.
A press on TV to guarantee the
cooperation of your nation in our new experiment. You did not choose it, but you'll have to